Good morning, and you're tuned in to the International Connection here on CKLN 88.1. And last month, we heard a three-part interview with Claudia Mullen, who began remembering in 1993 details of being part of a CIA mind control experimentation at Tulane University in New Orleans, and her training to be a sex slave to be used for sexual entrapment and blackmail of military officers, politicians, and other officials. She is alleging that CIA doctors such as Robert Heath, Ewan Cameron, Martin Orne, Sidney Gottlieb, and others were involved in her torture starting when she was 8 years old. Claudia Mullen's therapist is Valerie Wolfe, and today we're going to be hearing part two of a presentation by Valerie Wolfe entitled Assessment and Treatment of Survivors of Sadistic Abuse. This presentation was given at the Chicago Believe the Children Conference in April of 97. And Valerie talks about her methods for treating survivors of mind control. Valerie gave mind control testimony along with two of her clients, Claudia Mullen and Chris Ebner, to the Presidential Advisory Committee on Human Radiation Experiments in 1995. And now, here is Valerie Wolfe.
Now, the reason that works is because at some point, whatever was in their ears got taken out. It fast-forwards the memory to the end. Or if the electrodes are on them and you take them off, at some point they were taken off. Okay? Needles. Limbs dislocated. I have literally taken someone's arm and just given a little tug to put it back in. And this imagery all really works. So they are to do that in the morning, is do a complete body inventory, cleaning out anything in their nose, in their mouth, in their ears, around their neck. Sometimes there's stuff choking. Anything on their bodies, inside their vaginas, or anything around that area, off their legs, off their fingers and their toes. Because what they would do is put electrodes on the fingers and toes, play the messages at night, and shock them awake, and that sleep deprivation, and keep them awake for days while planting these suggestions in their minds. So you take all that stuff off, and I have them do it. And if they feel, in fact, I have one client that they used to put in this, she's a very creative artist, and they wanted to convince her that she couldn't draw. She's now beginning to be able to draw, but she's 53 years old and been very frustrated because she couldn't. But she had this thing where her fingers would curl, and it was a memory. So what we did is she learned how to get out of the suit that they put her in that would then jerk her fingers down to convince her that she couldn't draw or that she wasn't creative. Stuff like that. Physically, because they'll visualize it. And then the helper alters can help the ones that are coming out of the matrix. And then once they're all cleaned off, they go into the safe place. Okay, now sometimes they'll go there when they're finished, and they may give in the process their memories or information to the core birth personality. A lot of times what we'll do is wait till later. Okay, because we need to get stuff contained, and we need to get people functional. They do the same thing at night. They do the same thing if they have any kind of body pain or body symptom during the day. What is it? What is going on? Very non-leading. I'm not telling them anything. What is going on? And then they clean off whatever it is. And that's become a really, really good way of doing this. The other thing is, you need to listen to the client language, how they describe stuff. Not everybody can talk to you verbally. Sometimes they have to lie. It's part of their job. So I learned a game with one of my clients. It's called the game of opposites for people that have to lie to you. Tell me exactly what you do, what you want me to know, and put a not in the sentence. And so it's the tone of voice. I don't want you to know this information. Telling the truth, they're lying to me. They want me to know. Or it's not dangerous at all to go to that place. And sometimes you can say opposites. It's not dangerous to go to that, or it's too dangerous to go to that place. But it's a way of communicating. I have one client that went through a period where she had to be silent. 2 hours 2 hours she had to come into therapy and not say a word. It was a job, somebody's job. So what this part did is brought in, I have a tape recorder, spent I don't know how long putting together music on a tape to tell me what I needed to know. It's okay, no one said they couldn't play music. Okay? It was incredibly creative. I've had people write to me, journal, draw pictures. All of those are ways of communicating. Nothing is accidental. They're always trying to tell you something. And if you don't get it and you're being stupid, that's okay. They'll keep telling you until you get it. Because therapists can be awfully stupid about this stuff. Because I know I'm being stupid, but I'm not getting it. You need to give me a little more, you know, whatever. And then eventually, you know, of course, they don't give you any information. So that's really important to catch their language and how they talk about stuff and to just keep asking. Management of transference and countertransference. Transference does show up. I mean, if they have a bad relationship with their mother, that's going to show up with you. If they have a monster mom and they want to scream at monster mom, guess who gets screamed at? It just goes with the territory. Most of the time, I'm really patient with it. Sometimes people will hit a button and I'll get angry, but that's okay too because I'm modeling appropriate anger. People are amazed. I don't immediately fly into a rage and beat them up, but I don't. Very patient. Countertransference is difficult. You really have to. In fact, what I do a lot of times, and now I'm a lot more familiar, but you can imagine in the beginning with no one to talk to how difficult this was with all this behavior, all this stuff going on. But I have just learned to hold my breath and to take note of my natural reaction, which sometimes is really angry and really upset and thinking, oh, what am I doing here? Why are we doing this? On and on and on and on, because that's how I'm supposed to feel. And I know that's how I'm supposed to feel. And then I'd be very patient. Very, very patient, because we're going through something really important. And a lot of it is somebody has a job to distance me or to distance the people in their lives. So you really have to manage, because every single button, you have to know your countertransference issues. I have a peer support group that we've been meeting now since about 1982. And we know each other really well. And we really get into countertransference stuff, but you need that. I get confronted all the time. And a lot of my countertransference is the feeling that the therapist has for the client. Okay? But you really need that, because so I really care, and sometimes I care too much, and I really get confronted about that. And what I mean that is caring too much to the point where I'm beginning to get vicarious post-traumatic stress, when I'm starting to get nightmares, when I'm starting to cry, when I'm starting to really be affected by the material that I'm hearing. I use my peer group to confront me and get me out, and they really do a good job of helping me stay grounded. We meet twice a month now, and some of them are beginning to do this kind of work too, so we provide a really good support for each other. Time. Basically, I plan sessions with my clients. I don't have unplanned, generally. Almost never happens anymore now that I know what I'm working with here. But I plan sessions, but they are longer sessions, minimum an hour and a half. It takes a lot of folks, and this is with most of my DID clients, whether they're mind control or not. It takes usually a half hour to get settled down, and then we get an hour of work. If we're working on something really intensive, it can take a lot more, 4 hours sometimes or more. And so what I do is we plan ahead of time what we're going to do, and then we stick to the time. Don't tend to, and occasionally I have to have an unstructured time, so I have a Tuesday night that we can work without a time. I mean, I have that time period where people can rotate in and out of, because sometimes there are people that need to do, if they start on a series of memories, if you find that you start on a series of memories and it keeps looping back to the beginning, what you have is the core birth personality isn't getting the memory. You have an alter doing the memory work. Okay? So you need to be sure that the core birth personality is present. But it means sometimes that you really have to pace the work carefully and allow breaks. Don't drive people into the ground. It's really difficult work. But even in this stage, we plan pretty much a lot of times what our sessions are going to be. And I think that that's really important. Again, that's a teamwork, and that's the concept of teamwork. And it's real hard for some of these clients to understand. I mean, they get really angry about this teamwork. You're supposed to... In fact, I have a client right now who left my office on Tuesday basically saying, "You're supposed to be asking the questions. This isn't therapy." She's getting better. But she wants me to take responsibility, and I won't. Unfortunately, her previous therapist did. I mean, 2 years of asking questions and dragging stuff out. I'm not going to do that because that's not good therapy. Doing reality checks. Reality is really distorted. People can contact me through my machine. I don't wear a beeper. I worked at a psychiatric hospital for 2.5 years. I don't want to be on a beeper. I work really hard. And I am not going to be at anybody's beck and call for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week again. And it works fine. People can leave as many messages as long as they want to on my machine. I will get back to them. If it is a real emergency, they have my home phone. I have been, in the last 5 years that I've been in private practice, I've been called at home maybe 4 or 5 times. Which with this population is phenomenal because I have a lot of DID and trauma. I mean, my practice is practically all trauma. But they really respect that boundary, and I'm real clear, only in the direst of emergencies. But they can leave as many messages as they want on my machine, and they do. And that's great. And I listen to every single one of them and take them seriously, and I always listen to my tape before I go to bed at night. And my agreement is if I can do it, you know, I'll call them back at least by the next day if they need to talk to me. But a lot of times it's just little kids telling me stuff. You know, they just want to say this happened or this information or whatever, and I don't have to call back. You want to also, there are lots of distorted perceptions, and this is good therapy stuff. Just keep confronting the perceptions and working with the perceptions. Let me see. A lot of the treatment is management of shame, anger, and sadness, and especially in the mind control, that's what they hit at. Trying to make people feel responsible, trying to make them feel ashamed, it's your fault. One of my clients is just going through a series where if she looks one way, she sees on the, they use a lot of movies, she looks one way, she sees films of the Holocaust. Victims, emaciated, being tortured, horrible pictures on this side. If she looks the other way, they're really erotic pictures of people having sex while they're sexually stimulating her. What a choice. And because she chooses to not look at the Holocaust, she's told, "You're choosing to do this. See, it's turning you on. It's your fault." At the same time, reading the Bible to her and brought up in a very strict Catholic family, bringing in priests and nuns and all of this kind of stuff. And then reinforcing the shame, because most survivors of any kind of abuse feel guilty and ashamed and that it's their fault. And they really hit at this. So a lot of this is management of shame, anger, and sadness. Anger's tough. Because they got severely punished for being angry. One of my clients who was in a facility in Colorado, in fact, two of my clients were in a... It's interesting how the corroboration of the facilities and the details comes. But she talked about she really went out of the box with hysteria when they first started with her. And they duck her in water tanks to calm her down and half drown her. And then as she... got more calmed down, but she would get angry at what they were doing to her. They had a decompression chamber someplace outside of Denver. And I have two clients that talk about this decompression chamber. I don't know if it's it's a medical facility, but it's attached to an Air Force base.
Oh, okay. I thought there was a treatment place. I was doing
this. Well, this is where they were children brought with the mind control stuff. Anyway, they both describe a decompression chamber, and what they would do is put them in it and reduce the either increase the pressure. Do you know how much that hurts? Or decrease it so there wasn't any air in the chamber, pump the air out so that they couldn't breathe and had a difficult time breathing. And one of my clients describes that it's like your lungs feel like they're stuck together. And that's what they told her lungs were stuck together. So the issue of being at fault is a big one. Attachment to the perpetrators. God, there was so much done to attach them. The doctors are your friends. We're the ones that know you. We're your family. We love you, especially since one of the criteria was to pick kids from abusive families or neglectful families. They're already abused at home anyway. And I think parents were instructed to do abuse. We're the ones who love you. We're your family. A lot of SRA kind of stuff there. Safety. Now, a lot of the safety has to do with where you see the control. Are you in control in your own self, or are you being controlled externally? And this is the issue, too, of responsibility for safety. And you really got to deal with this one, because these kids have been taught that there's only external control, that they can have no internal control. Okay? So that's something you really have to work with in terms of the responsibility for their own safety, that other people don't control them. Okay, now, in talking about this, the other thing that you want to do, and the concept of the whole treatment of this as we move into, we're going to talk about doing memories and what this is all about real briefly. The concept is, we talked about how each of the alter systems is in the matrix. So how you start all this, and I was told wrong, basically, and all it did is succeed in flooding my clients and exhausting me for 3 months until I just, you know, started setting limits all over the place. Normal therapeutic boundaries and limits apply. I had to learn that. But normal limits and boundaries apply. But anyway, your task is to get every single one of those alters out of the matrix and into the safe place. How do you do that? One of the secrets in the system is that as fast as people were being put in the rooms, behind it, they were building tunnels and caves and mazes to connect everything. Okay? That's the working place, because what you're doing then is you're working through the maze, going through however, and getting all those kids out of the matrix and into the safe place. Now, into the safe place can mean that they automatically integrate once they've done their work, or it can mean that they stay on to be helper alters, or whatever it is, job that they take after that's completed. But that's the concept. One of the things that I learned to say to people, and it seems to make sense, is before we start this, turn it upside down, cut off the top, and bury it as deep as you can. The reason is, when they finished the quote programming and they put a cap on it, and it was something so horrible that no one would ever want to remember it. You don't want to start with that. So whatever shape it is, if it's an upside-down triangle, and I'll use that one, if it's an upside-down triangle, and you start at the end, the broad end, if you tap in there, which is where I did initially, what have you got? All those memories that start flooding in that layer. And it is in layers. They layered it by degree of trauma and degree of pain in the mind. So what happens is you turn it upside down so you have a regular triangle, cut off the top because there's serious trauma, poison, as one of my clients said. Bury it as deep as you can, because that's the last thing you're going to do. And then you start where it makes sense. This isn't leading. I mean, if someone didn't have mind control and you said that to them, they're going to look at you and say, what the hell are you talking about? You'd be amazed. People like go, oh, okay. And then they think about it and they do it. So then, you know, that's more confirmation. But, and then I say to start, so that things my clients have said to me have been, oh, you mean start with the little big memories. Oh, you mean start when I was old enough to understand what was going on. Oh, you mean start at the point at which I was beginning to understand. But they will determine it. They know where to start. And again, you're working through the maze, getting all the kids out and doing whatever it is that you have to do, and they know. They're the guides. They're the ones. I don't know. I can't tell you. I can't direct this. So, and getting them into the safe place. So then you're set up and prepared. The other thing you need to know about DID too, you have an internal system that is only internal, that does not interact with the outside world generally. They can, but they don't. You have a bridge parts, which are few, who can pull out inside parts, and you have outside parts that just deal with the outside, the CEO, parts that go to school, but they're not generally trauma. They may carry trauma, but they're not as traumatized as the ones inside. Your bridge parts are the ones that are the most helpful because they know who to get, and they're the guides through the matrix. Okay? And that's a real important concept to conceptualize. You don't even have to talk about it. It's automatic, but you need to have the conceptualization because it's real useful to know who the bridge parts are, and they'll become apparent because they're also the ones that there's a historian who know everything, and that's something else. Some part watched everything. Some part watched everything. So no matter what happened, my answer is, yeah, I know, somebody knows, but it's true, somebody knows, even though they were told not to watch and not to communicate inside. Move to the mind control. No, keep going. I'm going to skip over this stuff. Medical experimental.
Here it is.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm going to talk real specifically, and we're going to talk about memories. I have guidelines when we get to a stage. Now, all this stuff we just talked about in terms of the containment, twice daily practicing containment strategies, okay? All of that kind of stuff is preparation. That can take a long time. Normal therapy, we're not even into memory work. We're looking to control it and to deal with it. Unless I have somebody who's been in a lot of therapy and been through those stages of therapy and has it down and is pretty functional and can contain, I don't move into doing memory work. Now, I have several guidelines in terms of how I do memories. Number one, we do not have to do every memory. Number two, we need to plan sessions. And so if kids are coming out of the matrix, we're working through the maze, they give their memory back to the core birth personality or whatever it is that they carry. Not everyone has to do it. Okay, some just have to come out and be cleaned off. But there's important, and when we do memories, we are looking for information. What is the information we're looking for? We're looking for information on what they did. It is not sufficient to just cathart a memory or abreact a memory. There's always something that we're looking for. Post-hypnotic suggestions. Do the next one, because I couldn't. Wait a minute, do I have that? Yeah. Okay. We're looking for, we're looking for these kinds of information, because when people remember what the people actually did, they undo the programs. And one of the most profound things, and I'm realizing now how profound, and I have struggled for almost 4.5 years to figure this out because I just did it so naturally, and my clients have accepted it so well. Programs are memories. For those of you working with this, think about that, the implications of that statement. Programs are memories. Therefore, what I have found is that regardless of what you're dealing with, it has a concrete physical basis then. Something had to be done to this child to make them behave, feel, and I'm going through the BAS model, behavior, affect, sensation, and knowledge, behave, feel, sense on their bodies, body pain, and know what they know. So everything is memory. So if you're working with, quote, programs, if you work to me, if you're working at the level of decoding and getting codes and doing all of that, unless the person tells you they have to and that it's necessary, and I'm not ruling that out, but generally I've found that that's not necessary, that we're working at the level at which the researchers wanted us to work. We're also, I think, dehumanizing our clients. So what I'm proposing is grounding this back into our treatment model of memory work, and really good, solid memory work. I will not do memories unless I have some idea of what the memory is going to be. I don't go fishing. It has to be somewhere, somewhat in conscious memory. We plan it. We know generally, not always, but generally, we know pretty much what alters, what the, in fact, I have clients who write it down. I have another client who just comes in. She knows how much she has to do. She gets on the couch. The altar gives the core birth personality the information about what happened. Because if what experience now has a concrete physical basis then for example, if you have behavior modification techniques that taught alters how to do certain things, and you go back and look at what actually was done, then you don't have to do it anymore. If you have classical conditioning and you see how behaviors were linked through aversion or repetition or whatever, you don't have to do it anymore. And that's what we're looking for. What did they actually do? Give you an example. At this conference last year, I was talking to a survivor, and she said to me, what happens in the brain when you have blue out of this side and red out of this side? And she'd been walking around for months, seeing red out of everything out of a red filter in this side, everything out of a blue filter in this side. And I automatically just said to her, what do you see? And she'd done all this research on brain chemistry and neurology and searching through, really seriously looking for a physical condition. And I said, what do you see? A little voice comes out and says, oh, we're looking into, you know, like the thing in the eye doctor's office, and it's a blue lens on this side and a red lens on this side, and that's what we're looking into. And I said, well, what would happen if you looked away? I never thought of that. Looked away. Oh, it's gone. I said, well, you don't have to look at it anymore. Oh, okay. Core birth personality came back, and she'd been dysfunctional for 3 months, not able to read, not able to work, not able to drive because of this. And so if you're dealing, or I have another client who kept choking, and she'd been in therapy with a previous therapist who really did a mess. And basically what she did was she was choking, and the therapist had interpreted for her without asking that it was a penis in her mouth and that it was oral sex, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I don't assume anything. So I just said, well, what is that associated with? Or what does that remind you of? She thought a minute, and she goes, oh, God damn it. They put a sock in my mouth. And it was a sock, and they were trying to choke her to make her anorexic. There were other incidents of other things, but that's what it was. So you cannot assume that you know what they're telling you about. So ask. They used a lot of hypnosis. A lot of the behavior that you see today is the result of post-hypnotic suggestions. Well, I'm trained. I went and got training in hypnosis. I mean, I've gotten a lot of training over the last 5 years to help me deal with this. But I don't use hypnosis to look for memories. I don't.